We are on page 9 and 10, the beginning of chapter 3. The Alter Rebbe at this point has defined for us what a nefesh elokis is, a divine soul, as being an essential expression of God. Now, essential accent in the next two chapters, he's going to qualify that, because essential expressions of God don't work. They're too beyond being able to function in this world.
They're too spiritual.
Yeah, it's too way beyond. So in these next two chapters, he's going to describe how the godly soul is able to relate to a physical world.
Okay.
In this chapter, chapter 3, Hi.
Pinchas, Herschel Pinchas, again.
Yeah. Who is Pinchas?
Pinchas Leib.
So, in chapter 3, the Alter Rebbe describes the composite or composition of the neshama. Okay? It would be really cool if I could bring up like the sphere chart. Do you have a sphere chart handy?
Not right in front of us, but
okay, you can imagine one. Okay, so let's commence. It says, "V'hinei kol b'chinas ha'madregos m'sholos elu nefesh ruach and neshama." All of these aspects of the soul that we talked about before, which were translated as soul, Kalula me'eser b'chinas, are comprised of 10 attributes, 10 aspects, also known as the 10 spheros, k'neged eser spheros ha'elyonos, which are corresponding to the 10 supernal spheres, sh'nistalshel lu mehem, which are derived from them. One of the easier interpretations of Nasa Adam Bitzalmeno, let us make man in our image, is Hashem has 10 attributes and people have 10 attributes. Okay?
We say Hashem has 10 attributes or they emanate from Hashem?
Hashem has 10 attributes. It's the same thing. It's meaning the 10 spheres of Atzilus is when you say that God has kindness or God is smart. That is referring to the sphere of Atzilus.
Atzilus is nobility.
Atzilus is emanation. The world of emanation. Okay?
So how can we say that God has 10 of something in this case? If you're talking about something that's not divisible, that's a transfer.
That question is actually answered in the note at the beginning of chapter 2. Okay. When Hashem allows himself to be divisible, so Hashem is divisible. And in those levels which are above division, so at that point, so you're talking about quintessential levels of godliness. And the Alter Rebbe even goes so far as to say that the interpreting the pasuk kulam b'chachma asisa, Hashem made everything with wisdom, that the highest sphere, when you're starting about differentiation, the highest level that we can relate to for Hashem is the bottom. Because at that point, you're talking about limiting godliness. Even though it's...
We can relate to as in Bria or Atzilus?
No, that's in the world of Atzilus. It's the world of emanation.
Okay.
When the verse says, Kula machachma asisa, you have created everything in wisdom, that's the beginning of the creation process known as Seder Istalshelus. Correct. Okay, so we have wisdom, and you can work on it both ways. We can understand God by looking at ourselves, and we can look at ourselves by understanding God. Which is what he's going to do over here. So it says that. That's something else. Sorry. That the 10 spheres are divided into two. Shehen shalosh emos v'sheva kafulos. He calls them the three mothers, and he quantifies what that means on the bottom of the page. Three mothers and seven doubles. Pirush Chochma Bina V'Das, meaning wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. V'Shevus Yemei HaBinyan, and the 7 days of creation. Chesed Gevurah Teferes, and etc. Now, okay, so let's stop right here. This is where the sphere chart comes in handy. Okay, so if you're looking at the sphere chart, you notice that it says that on top of the sphere chart, there are 10 spheres. Yet if you look, all of these fancy Kabbalah charts have 11. And the Arizal reckons that one, that when you count Keser, you don't count Das, and when you count Das, you don't count Keser, because there's actually two different systems that are going on simultaneously in the creation process. The one which the Alter Rebbe refers to here, when he counts Chochma Bina Das, which is the abbreviation for Chochma Bina Das, is Chabad, because the Chabad philosophy emphasizes intellect. So the Chabad, when you're talking about that one, when we're counting the Das knowledge, so that is the creation process which enlivens everything. And everything is enlivened in a very specific way, such that rocks are a lower life force than plants, and plants are a lower life force than animals, and animals are a lower life force than humans. Okay?
But there's not a system that has Keter, like Kochab or something, right? That doesn't exist?
It actually is talked about, Kochab.
Kochab?
Yep. Now, the Alter Rebbe doesn't talk about it. It's not talked about at great length in Chabad Hasidus. Maybe they talk about it more in Breslover Hasidus, which are called Keser Hasidim. But I haven't learned enough Breslover Hasidim to know if that is true or not. The second one is what would be called Sovev Kol Olmim, or the encompassing creation, that on that, which is an expression of divine will. And with divine will doesn't work the same way as the inner powers. With will is the same all over. And a rock, a plant, an animal, and a human being all exist exactly the same. And in looking at a person's will, the details of a person's will are not a step-by-step degradation of will, as it is per se, like with the development from intellect to emotion, that there we have a containment of intellect produces emotion. That's what he's going to talk about over here. When you're talking about will, the details of the will are what are the will. Whereas you could understand something a little bit, you could like something a little bit, but you can't want something a little bit.
And I feel like I need a correspondence to really get why is it that will is generalized and an intellect is more specific and channels through Tim's.
Okay, again, so when you want something, you want it in its entirety. You don't want little pieces of it. You want the whole thing, and you want it the way you want it.
You can't say, I want it in any situation. I want peace. Yes. I want peace.
Yeah. You want this thing, and you want it the way you want it to be. If any detail is missing, this is not what you want. You don't want it at all. You may be able to accept it, but a compromise, what's a compromise? A compromise is, this is not what I want, but I understand that this is the best I'm going to get, so I'm going to take it. So it's a good compromise. Everybody walks away unhappy. Because nobody got what they wanted. Okay? So the Alter Rebbe doesn't talk about will and desire for the same reason we talked about before, that the Alter Rebbe doesn't talk about the two levels of the soul which encompass the body of Chaya and Yechida. He only talks about Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. Why?
Delight and will?
Yeah, delight and will. He doesn't talk delight about those, because you have no... this is the Sefer Shalbeinani. This is, how am I going to utilize the tools that God gave me to be the very best person that I could possibly be? So to do that, you have to take control of your cognizant being. Your cognizant being is thought, speech, and action. What you like and what brings you pleasure, you have absolutely no control over. I can't tell you to stop liking something. I can tell you, don't indulge. That I can do, and you can figure out how much you indulge. If I indulge, if I'm not going to indulge, how much do I'm going to indulge? But whether you like it or not, you like it or you don't like it. And you have no control over that whatsoever. I just came across an article. Usually I use the example of Brussels sprouts as to what people like and don't like. Okay? But I came across an article about cilantro. Cilantro is actually a topic of heated debate. People don't say, you know, cilantro, I could take it, I could leave it. Okay? Cilantro evokes a radical reaction. Oh, I love cilantro, or I think cilantro tastes like baby barf. Okay? Those are the two reactions that you get. Okay? And in my family, we have those people who are like, cilantro's the greatest thing, even better than sliced bread, to those people like myself who believe that cilantro tastes like baby barf. And usually when you come up with people who say, well, did you ever taste baby barf? Well, I said, yes, I have lots of kids, and it happened many times that I happened to be opening up my mouth when the kid decided I'm going to let one fly. Yes, so I know what baby barf tastes like too. Anyway, and that's what cilantro tastes like in my mind. And they're coming up now that it's a genetic thing. People are genetically predisposed to their like or dislike of cilantro. So it's absolutely nothing you control. When my daughter made a salad the other day, and she came all the way from New York, and she wanted to impress all the people there, and she put like a healthy serving of cilantro in there, and I just kind of like said, okay, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to eat it. And how bad could it really be? It's only food, and it was a wretching experience. I really couldn't stomach the stuff. So, and I have no control. I said, I'm going to tell myself, it's only just an herb. Okay? How bad could an herb be? It's not going to kill me to eat it, and I didn't die. But
it will.
I really could not tell. It was not bringing me pleasure. Not at all, and I did not want to eat it. Okay? I had no control over it. So the Alter Rebbe is saying, we're not going to talk about something you have no control over. Why bother? So the Alter Rebbe focuses not on Keser Chochma Bina. Why bother? He focuses on Chochma Bina and Das. That's where you can control things. Now, in the upper right-hand chart, upper right-hand of the chart is Chochma, wisdom. Okay? Wisdom, understanding, and knowledge mean nothing. In fact, all the translations of all the spheres, really for the most part, don't mean anything. But that's the way they're translated. And in English, the expression wisdom, understanding, and knowledge are pretty much synonymous. In Hebrew, Chochma, Bina, and Das have nothing to do one with the other. Chochma is called the flash of inspiration. It's the aha moment. You can do that better than I can.
Aha!
Thank you. Yes, that moment. And when a person suddenly, if you were to draw it as a cartoon, it would be the light bulb going up off over the top of the head. Bing! Okay? Now, so what all this is, it's called a baraka maverick. It's called a flash of lightning, a flash of inspiration. What happens to 99.99% of all lightning?
It just goes.
Just goes. That's it. It's a big flash. You get a big boom, and then
slipped into the ground. Generally,
yeah. You go. Well, you go weiter with your life, and that's it. Okay. This is happening. These flashes of inspiration are happening constantly. They're all just your brain is just like your synapses are just going bing, 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 bing all the time. Okay. And for the most part, nothing happens with it. Okay. What has to happen then? It's analogized by a point. Okay? A point is dimensionless. You really can't do anything with a point. All it does is take up a place on a plane. It really doesn't do anything. Okay?
Line.
Pardon?
A place on a line.
Yeah, a place on a line. Okay, so now what happens then is we have to take that and we have to develop it. We have to take the inspiration, we have to do something with it. The point needs to be developed. Okay, so that's Bina. Understanding is taking this flash of inspiration and working on it to the point where a person can say, oh, I got it. I can see that this is something. I understand this.
Yeah.
Okay, meaning to say, I know, I can figure out this goes like this and that goes like that, and this is a something. Okay, that's analogized by a plane. Chokhmah is a point. Bina is a plane. Okay? So
because you're giving Bina two dimensions?
Yes.
Why not three? The third becomes...
That's Das. Okay? Because what are you gonna, what can you do with a two-dimensional object?
You can cut a three-dimensional object.
Okay. It's still going to be... What purpose does a two-dimensional object have? Not a whole lot, you know, so... So the right side of the sphere chart, which would be Chachma, Chesed, and Netzach, is the male side. The left side, which would Bina, Gevura, Hod, that's the female side. What's the definition of male and female in this point? We're not saying if you understand something, you're effeminate. No. What male and female is, male is the giver, female is the recipient. That's not sexist, that's just the way the world goes. They do the same thing with plumbing and electricity. Okay? You have male ends of pipes and female ends of pipes. You have male adapters and female adapters. That's what they're called. Okay? The giver part is called the male, and the receiver part is called the female. And so that's the way it works with these two also. Chachma and Bina are referred to in the Zohar as Trei Reyin Delo Mefarshin, two friends that never separate. Because what happens is as you understand something, you go, that's great. And the information gets sent back to the right side of the brain, which now causes a greater inspiration for something else, which then causes something to flip back over here and says, okay, since you understood that, let's now work on this and understand that. It's constantly going back and forth.
It's a response to what has developed in Bina.
Correct.
So we're saying Chokhmah actually responds to what has developed in Bina.
Correct. There's a constant interdependence between the two. Okay? This has actually been proven physically or physiologically. In Montreal, I don't know if you know this man, there is a professor at McGill University whose name is Yaakov Brouwer. He is a professor of neuroendocrinology, which means he understands about that much about of a person's body. Okay? So he's done tremendous amounts of awards based on things that are talked about in Hasidus.
Hmm.
Okay, so he discovered there's a woman who came in that had some sort of an open head injury and required a plate to be inserted in her brain. And it separated the right from left hemisphere.
The plate did.
The plate did, yes. So there's no interaction between the two hemispheres of the brain. This woman, if she would cover her eye and look at something with her right eye, and then cover her right eye, and then look at the thing with her left eye, would have no recollection of having ever seen that object.
Sure.
Okay? So there's this interdependency going on between the right and left hemispheres of the brain. Okay? But it's same like in Chokhmah and Bina, because we're after pattern after this. Das, knowledge, is, he talks about it at the end, is talked about the least in Hasidus because it's the hardest to actually do. Das is not actually intellectual. Knowledge means, now that I've got this information, what am I going to do with it? What are the practical applications of it? Das also happens to be the bridge between the intellect and the emotions. It's how do
I would have thought that the practical application of something would be more of a bina process. That's das?
Yeah. No. Bina just says, I understand this. I know what all the things are here. Okay? You have a person who's very book smart.
Yeah.
But doesn't know what to do with all this information. Understanding is, I got it. I understand it. Listen, I understand.
Say I have an idea. Oh, I want to teach a class, right? Yeah. Oh, that's what I should do. That's my light bulb, right?
Yeah.
Just, okay, so what now I'm thinking, what is the class going to be? How many people? That's not Bina. It's practical kind of.
No. Bina would be, what class am I doing?
Yeah.
What am I going to teach? I mean, Bina, a better example would be is I understand how you would go finding out the cosecant in trigonometry. But I haven't got a clue what to do with the information of once I know what the cosecant of something is.
Yeah.
So I understand it. I'll tell you. I'll give you a whole class on how to find out the cosecant and the inverse of the tangent, the whole business over there. But I don't know what to do with it. I just know.
So the way the intellectual starts to move towards being able to be applied into the real world.
Correct. Correct. And he talks about that at the end of the chapter. Okay. Then you have the various emotions. Okay. The spheres. And whereas
he I apologize. It'll ring a few times. I can't.
The emotions are you have chesed on the middle one on the right. Okay, is kindness. Kindness says give. That's what kindness is. Just plain give. That's its only thing that kindness knows how to do is just give. Opposite to that, the female counterpart is gevura. Now, gevura is translated many ways. It's translated strength, it's translated severity, it's translated contraction. And what gevura, it's restraint. Gevura says, don't give. Okay? And so what happens is they work together in tandem so that you have the middle column and all of those things, the right couples together with the left to form the middle. Okay? So the middle of the perfect blend of not of giving and not giving is the middle Tiferes. Tiferes is translated beauty. That means absolutely nothing. Okay, it's such a beautiful, a godly attribute. Did you ever see? Oh my, such a beautiful attribute.
Well, the way I heard beauty explained that made sense to me that beauty is a blending of opposites. Like when you see different pure colors blended together beautifully in an art piece, it's the combination of them that creates something.
Correct. So, like for example, the shirt I am wearing, I could say it's a nice shirt. But no one has ever stopped at me and said, oh, that's such a beautiful shirt you're wearing. Why not? Because it's just a plain white shirt. It's a nice shirt. It's a nice white shirt. But we wouldn't call it beautiful because there's nothing to it. It has to have, it needs something to jazz it up a bit. Like when I was wearing tie-dye t-shirts, so I'd get stopped in the street with those. You know, so the perfect blend of kindness and restraint is called Rachmanis. Mercy. Mercy does not mean kindness. Kindness does not mean mercy. How is this manifest? You're sitting at a light, and a guy knocks on your window, I'm hungry, could you give me a dollar? Kindness would say, here's a dollar.
Here's $10.
Or whatever. Exactly. I'm a kind person, I'm giving you what you want. Okay, because I'm so kind. Did you guys do this guy a favor? Not necessarily. Okay, maybe this guy is going to take that dollar and he's going to do something injurious to himself. Okay, so it could be something called misplaced kindness. Then what would restraint be? Guy knocks in a window, guy says, I'm hungry, I need a dollar. You say, get away from my car and hit the gas. Okay, that's restraint. Rachmanis is, I feel your plight. But I'm not going to give you a dollar because I am suspect that you will do something which is going to be injurious to you. Rather, instead, I have an apple sitting on the seat next to me. you're hungry, here's an apple. Okay? That would therefore be a sign of compassion. I feel that you have needs, but I'm not just going to throw money at it.
And also, not just that it might be misplaced kindness because they will do something bad for them, but they might simply not deserve it. Maybe somebody's been a terrible crime, right? And they're mm-hmm. in front of a judge, and they knows they don't deserve, they deserve their punishment, but maybe the judge decides, even though they deserve their punishment, some kind of clemency.
Correct. Right? That type of a thing. Yeah.
Chesed doesn't have consideration like that.
No, you want, I'm giving. That's it. Okay, what are the ramifications? We see the patriarchs are analogized by these three spheros. Abraham is kindness, Yitzchak is gevura, severity, restraint, and Yaakov is rachmanis. What was the product of all of Abraham's kindness? Well, we got a Yitzchak out of the deal, but we also got a Yishmael. Yitzchak is restraint. Okay? And what happened? Okay, so things were, we were holding back Abraham's kindness. In fact, we say every day in davening, three times a day, four times on Shabbos and Yontif, Magen Avraham. What is the translation of Magen Avraham?
The shield of Abraham.
Shield of Abraham. What does that mean, the shield of Abraham? That he's protecting Abraham, right?
Yeah, like okay. When Abraham stands in the furnace.
Right. He's protecting Abraham from anything happening. Okay? Right. But a shield of Abraham could also be that he's shielding us from Abraham.
It's too much chesed.
Too much kindness. Hold back. We got, you know, you did good, but, you know, all those Yishmaelites, hello? You know? So we say the bracha, Magen Avram, don't love me so much, as my mother would say. From Yitzchak, we had a Yaakov, good. But we had an Esav, and Esav's much worse than Yishmael. What happens now is the good points of Avraham and the good points of Isaac come together, and they form Jacob. Jacob is Mr. Rachmanis, Mr. Middle Guy. What happened with him? 12 righteous sons who became the 12 tribes. Okay? So there's no such thing as misplaced compassion.
Right.
Because compassion means, you know, the best thing for you, buddy, is that you go to jail. That's going to be the best thing for you. Compassion doesn't mean I'll give you what you want. I take care of you. Oh, I feel so sorry for you, and therefore I'm going to, you know, be easy on you. No, that's kindness. Compassion could mean that the best thing to happen to a 12-year-old sitting at the border in Texas is to go back to Guatemala. How am I supposed to know? I mean, you know, maybe. So, those are the three. Now.
Compassion resists either of them, right? Chesed has to resist, chesed, but Rachmanis doesn't resist anything. It's available to both.
It is what it is. Correct. It's everything working up full jets. Okay, now. At this point, there's no division, but if I were drawing these sphere charts, I would put a horizontal dotted line between Das and what's lower than it. Okay, because the next three, the first three of kindness, restraint, and Rachmanis are emotions. The next three are not emotions, they're practical applicators.
Do you mean between Das and Netzach, or between Das and Tiferet, or where's the dotted line?
There should be a dotted line between Tiferes and Das, and there should be a between Tiferes and Chesed and Gevura, and there should be There should be a dotted line between Das and Chesed and Gevura, and there should be a dotted line between Tiferes and Netzach and Hod.
I see.
Okay.
Das splits up to become Chesed and Gevura.
Correct. Okay.
That's contains the potential for both of those.
Right. Now, Tiferes doesn't necessarily split into Netzach and Hod.
Okay? But Das does.
Yes, Das is actually comprised of kindness and severity. We put on our tefillin And specifically, our Shel Rosh Tefillin has four compartments corresponding to the four parts of the brain, which are wisdom, understanding, and then Das is split into two, as is divided in the back of the brain. The back of the brain is split into two, the right side and the left side, which is called kindness of Das and restraint of Das.
And when some talk about Emil, is that a different community?
Pardon?
When some people talk about imagination, demons, as the fourth part, is that a different school of thought?
No, that's all part of it. It's all part and parcel. Okay, so now, what are Netzach and Hod? So Netzach means victory. That's a good translation. Charge! That's what gets you moving. I want to overcome the obstacle. Okay? It is what propels us to do anything. Okay? It what gets us out of bed in the morning.
Yes.
Okay? Hod is translated as splendor. Absolutely no relevance whatsoever to what it does. I would translate or interpret Ho to be consistency or follow through. It's the female of the male charge. Okay? The male is saying, go, slay the dragon. Okay? The female is saying, I think you better analyze the situation before you get your head handed to you. An example is given of you're late for an appointment and it's Michigan and there's road construction all over the place and traffic is traveling it like creeping along and the appointments are getting later and later and later. So what do you notice? That the right lane is empty because mostly the right lane is for turning right and all these cars are going straight, but it doesn't say right lane, right turn only. It just says nothing. So you get into the right lane, but now there's a problem because as soon as you get through the intersection, there are parked cars in the right lane. So what are you going to do? Okay, so you pull up to you're sitting at the light, you pass 30 cars sitting passing on your left. Okay, and you pull up right to the front of the line. Okay, so now what do you have to do? You have to get into the left lane. Okay, so there's two ways you could do this. Victory would say you sit there next to the guy next to you like the mongoose and the cobra, and you're waiting, you're looking at the traffic light like those Christmas trees in a drag strip, and as soon as that light hits green, you peel out. Okay? Now, that works a lot. In Michigan, it works really a lot because people are so courteous. Oh, you're in a hurry. I'm not such a hurry. So you can go before me. In Michigan, it works. In New York, you would forget about it. Forget about it. In fact, that's what the guy next to you would say. I'm sitting here for four lights already to get to this point, and you want to get in front of me? Forget about it. So what happened when you exert your attribute of victory? You're touching on his attribute of victory. So this is where consistency comes in. Okay? What do? You let the guy know that you're going to peel out in front of him. Okay? You give him the look, one of these numbers, you know, it's off to the left. Uh-huh. Okay? You rev the engine a little bit. The light changes. You hit the gas, and you let off. He hits the gas, floors it, and then you pull in behind him. What the pulling back has done, the follow-through, has helped save you from smashing into the parked car in front of you, smashing into him on the left, getting smashed by the guy whose victory is saying, beat the red light. Okay? And you've accomplished your goal of passing all these cars and getting to your appointment. But you could say, wait a minute, but there's a second car there. But you're not, your victory hasn't hit him. He's second. And he knows he's going to be second. He's not involved with the whole thing altogether. Okay? So that's called the follow-through. Consistency. Stop a second. Analyze the situation. Don't just charge. Maybe the way to get ahead is to pull back. The follow-through. That would be Hod.
And I also heard described as acknowledgement.
Acknowledgement. Okay. Yeah, different people have different ways of talking because it's such nebulous, because it's called splendor. Splendor means the same amount of anything as beauty does, you know? And I couldn't even tell you why it's even called splendor, because what's so splendid about restraining yourself?
But in your story, by letting the other person go ahead of me, I'm acknowledging way before lights, and I kind of through, so I'm looking for his netza to advance.
Correct. Right. I'm acknowledging his place. I'm not the only thing that exists. And if I get him to rev up his engine, guess what? He's going to be going pretty quick down that same line that I want to be going down. So I don't mind being behind him because he's got his netzach going up. Okay.
Yeah.
What's your site? You said it's translated as foundation. I would translate it as being prepared, preparedness, readiness. It's like you're planning a speech. Okay? So you figured out exactly it is what you're going to say, and you're going over in your mind exactly how you're going to say it, and you haven't said it yet. It's all there. Everything is there. It's ready, willing. Just all you have to do is open up your mouth and say it.
Mm-hmm.
What's an example of yisoid? The way people talk into answering machines. You listen to somebody talking on an answering machine. Hello, you have reached so-and-so. After the tone, please leave a message and we'll get back to you. So it's like people don't talk like that. Okay? And I have to do a thing. When I'm like doing a monologue on air, so I have to be looking at the board op in the through the glass. Like I'm talking to him, the monologue, because otherwise I'll just fall into this like non-speech. Because what's the deal?
Kind of thing, yeah.
What's the deal is when you speak, you're speaking to somebody. But if there's nobody there, then you don't need to speak. The fact that you're speaking, that's not using the final product, the final result. Malchus, we would call the final result. There's no need for a final result at that point. You're not talking to anybody.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's missing that finalness. That's why it sounds so stilted. That's Yesod. It's all ready. It would be like the relationship between Yesod and Malchus is Yesod is the masculine, Malchus is the feminine. Yesod is, it's all right there, it's ready to go. And Malchus is saying, I'm taking it, I'm running with it. Okay? So now what happens, when you get to that point, I can't do this on a computer screen, I could do it with a piece of paper. When we get down to Malchus, Malchus is analogized by speech or action, it's the final result. Okay? It is the recipient of all the other previous 9 spheres. It's analogized as being like the sea to which all rivers flow. Okay, so what happens now is, if you can imagine, you take your Malchus at the bottom, and you have a Keser at the top, and now to get to the next world, you invert them. So what happens is the Malchus of the top world becomes the desire, the Keser, for the next world. And the process continues down through the next world, the next realm. Until you finally get...
That makes sense, because once I've gone through the whole intellectual world, and now it's finally complete, it's ready to move, it's going to move into me saying something.
Correct. Finally. Okay. Okay, so that's what it says. So he calls the intellect, he calls it the three mothers, and the seven doubles are the emotions. Then he says, that means to say, Chachma Bina and Das, and Shevis Yimei Abinyan, Chesed Gevura Teferis. He calls the emotions the 7 days of creation. Because if you look at the creation story in Genesis chapter 1, each day is a product of one specific emotion. The first day was light, energy, unbridled, unbounding, total just give. The second day was space. Total restraint. The third day...
How is space restraint?
Because we're holding back the light. That's all that happened on the second day. You got all this light. We're going to create space. We're going to say the light goes over there. We're pushing away the light. Just total establishment of boundaries.
So you're talking about spiritual light that is outside of space. It can't be contained within space. So to create space, you need to restrain the spiritual
light.
Okay.
The third day, things are put where they're supposed to go. The water goes here. The dry land goes here. Grasses and herbs and trees start growing over here. Things are the way they're supposed to be. That's Teferis. Until finally we get to Shabbos. Shabbos is Malchus. Okay, the final resultant. You know, that's the end of the week. Baruch Hashem, we made it to Shabbos. Okay? So he says now, so v'kach b'nefesh ha'odim, shenechleku l'shtayim, seichel amidos. So it is also a human being, my own persona, since I am a composite of divine expression, I am drawn from divine expression, I am made in the image of God, so I'm also comprised of 10 attributes. Seichel and Midas. I have a wisdom, an understanding, a knowledge. In fact, I had to use me to describe what it was like with talking about Hashem. Haseichel kelo chokhma bina and das. The intellect is comprised of wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. V'amidas, what are the emotions? We're talking about the emotions of the godly soul. The midas are avas Hashem, upachta v'yirasa lefarei, are called the love of Hashem, the dread and fear of Hashem, Lefara, the beautification of Hashem, the hiddur mitzvahs and having to serve Hashem. And you notice back when he's talking about Hashem, he calls the midas Sheva Kfulos, the seven doubles.
Yeah.
Because the animal soul is primarily an emotional expression. There's a difference in the way that it works, the godly soul and the animal soul. The godly soul is primarily intellectual, and the emotions are an offshoot of the intellect, a development from the intellect. The person is sitting and meditating and thinking about Hashem and the relationship with Hashem, and from that is given birth an emotion of love and fear. With the animal soul, it's exactly the opposite. I like something, I want something, and my intellect is, how do I facilitate going and getting it?
That cake, or that...
Whatever that happens to be. Whatever's going to bring me pleasure, how do I go getting it? That's all the intellect is for, because of the emotional experience which I want to experience. That's the difference between an animal and a human being. That's why he refers to it as doubles.
You're saying doubles as in... flowing through Nefesh Elohit, Nefesh Bamid, or doubles
yes.
in...
doubles as in godly soul, animal soul.
Okay. But also flow in a double way, right? I mean, you're saying...
Yes, I'm saying that the animals, the intellect of the animal soul is so immature that it's no way comparable to the intellect of the godly soul, to say that it's on par with. Even though you may have a very smart animal that knows how to get chocolate ice cream, but it's not on par to understanding the greatness of Hashem from which is developed the love of Hashem. Whereas the love of Hashem that a person has is on par, it's the same thing, it's love of Hashem as opposed to, say, love of chocolate ice cream.
If I could dwell on that for a moment... It's to me like from my perspective, it feels like where I'm at, the midos that Seich creates are more subtle than the midos that Nebuchadnezzar creates. I mean, when I want a cake, I want a cake.
Sure.
I see a new movie, I really want to see it.
Sure.
Do I love Hashem? Do I love, you know, as much as I want to see a new movie? Is it that? Not really, right? Maybe
yes.
That comes later. I don't know.
This is actually the point of chapter 9.
Okay.
How do I get my intellect of my godly soul to control the emotions of my animal soul?
And as well, the seichel of my midot are very highly developed. You know, I mean, I could spend an entire year simply thinking about how to get what I want. I mean, when I was 17, that's what I did, right?
Yes.
So, again, from my experience, it does feel like they all can operate. Maybe that's not the ideal, but maybe they all can operate as doubles.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying ideally, the the intellect of the Midot should not be as strong as the intellect of the intellect of
the animal soul is not as developed as the intellect of the godly soul. Why is it that you don't see that empirically? Is because you haven't let your godly soul do its thing. Oops.
What about the soul of the boy?
Pardon?
The soul of the non-Jew. How does it fit in this picture?
In this, it doesn't. As far as the paradigm goes that we're talking about, because we mentioned before that the godly soul was given specifically to the Jewish people. This is what makes us called the quote-unquote the chosen people. We were chosen to get this extra measure of godliness, which now with power comes responsibility. We have to do 613 mitzvahs, and the non-Jews have to do only 7 mitzvahs. But we're also given the job of being the world police, you might say, or the purifiers, the ones who are trying to make the world a better place, because we have this godly soul.
And how does the righteous tzaddik fit into that?
The righteous non-Jew? Somewhere in the middle. Yes. You're talking about the righteous non-Jew?
Non-Jew.
Somewhere in the middle.
Comparison of the soul of humans and the soul of animals.
Correct.
But in that picture, there are many...
Well, a cow feels pain.
The soul is not what the role is about mitzvahs, but what is the soul? What's the soul comprised of?
It's also godly, but then again, the soul of a cow is also from Hashem. A soul feels compassion, a cow feels compassion, a cow will get angry. So animals have emotions, and they do have somewhat of an intellect. You'll go ask some, animal psychologist about the intellectual development of various and sundry animals. And there we see that the intellect is totally and completely geared to survival in an animal.
So where is the soul of the non-Jew? He's like an animal?
In this paradigm, but not in that tone of voice, the soul of a non-Jew is like the soul of an animal, yes. Be more closely related to that than the godly soul that a Jew has.
So that doesn't have the skill of Chokhmah and Binah and that.
It has all that, but for the pursuit of what its emotions are. And it doesn't have, a non-Jew doesn't have the same spiritual sensitivity that a Jew has. That's why the non-Jew is not required of a non-Jew to do 613 commandments, because they don't have the spiritual sensitivity which would warrant them doing all 613 commandments. It's enough that they do 7. And by the way, it makes it easier for them, because a non-Jew who does 7 commandments, he's there when Mashiach comes. A Jew who did 612, he's got some answers to answer, because he didn't do 613. This one gets 100, this one gets a 99.9. Okay, he missed one. He's not doing it 100%. Okay?
Good.
Midos ha'im apakot v'yiras ha'vasar, v'chabad nikra emos umakar l'midos, ki ha'midos ha'im teildos chabad. And he said before that the intellect is called the mothers, and it's the source of the emotions, because the midos, the emotions, are offspring of the intellect. And he qualifies this as more in chapter 6. A child is easily pleased and easily angered. If your 2-year-old falls down and starts screaming his head off, and you hand the kid a lollipop, he stops screaming, everything's fine. Okay? The president of the board of directors at your place, I would hope if he falls down, first of all, he's not going to start screaming his head off. And I'd be really concerned if you handed him a lollipop and everything was just like wonderful. Okay? It's going to take, and what, for example, he gets mad at somebody for doing something, and to the point where he's now angry because such a thing has happened, and angry, we talk about it another time. Handing this guy a lollipop is not going to make him feel any better. because his intellect has developed that he's not easily angered, but once he has now been angered, it's going to take a lot more for him to be appeased than the lollipop, which a two-year-old is perfectly happy with. Okay? So that's all because of the development of the intellect. As the intellect develops, the emotions develop. A child wants childish things because its intellect doesn't understand better. There's a story involving the rabbi who got me religious, that he went in for a private audience with the rabbi, and he first, well, I don't know what the occasion was, and he brought his whole family with him. And at that time, his youngest daughter was less than 3 years old. So the rabbi said that he's going to give her some money. Okay? So he gave her, he gave her a dollar. So she took a look at it, and she said, "What's this? I thought you were going to give me money." So he took out a nickel and he handed it to her. She was very happy. Okay? She's a two-year-old. She knows what a nickel is. She doesn't know what a piece of paper is. What's this? You know, so, because a child understands this little thing, a nickel is definitely worth 1/20th of a dollar, even no matter what the money's worth, comparably speaking. Okay? So, but for the kid, this is worth something. This is not worth anything because the kid doesn't know about it. Now that she's a, the head shlucha in Alabama, and if you were to hand her a nickel instead of a dollar, I don't think she'd appreciate it so much. In fact, she probably wouldn't even appreciate the dollar that you gave her. So, because their budget's much bigger than that. So,
Herschel, I had a question with something I wanted to run by you, and also